Well, good evening. I am Molly Hall. I'm president of the Springfield chapter of the Association for Women in Communications. And on behalf of our co-host, NPR Illinois, on behalf of our co-host, NPR Illinois, we welcome you to our forum. As goes journalism, so goes the community. Both of our organizations have a strong commitment to communicating vital information, like the programs that are provided by NPR Illinois, AWC Springfield programs, which are monthly, are open to the public, and we invite you to join us for those. Each of our organizations has served the region for nearly half a century, and there's been a lot of change over that period of time. We are pleased to have a panel of seasoned journalists with us for a thought-provoking discussion on the state of local news reporting today in our community. I'm going to be introducing our moderator, Sean Crawford, who's the news director for NPR Illinois. And we were talking earlier. I started my career in broadcast journalism, and I was a reporter for over a decade. And we were talking about this terrible trend of the decline in the number of reporters back then. We're talking the 1980s and 90s. So this trend of the declining number of reporters is nothing new. So I'm really eager to have the discussion tonight. We want you all to be interactive, so please don't be shy about coming up to the microphone and stating a comment or making your question to the panel, and we'll have a lively discussion. Sean?
Thanks a lot, Molly. And again, our discussion tonight, as goes journalism, so goes the community. Our goal tonight is to peel back the curtain on what the work we do here as journalists, talk about the industry as a whole and what it means for this area. And again, in the time I have been involved in journalism, I've also seen major changes in the industry, and certainly not always for the best. Journalism jobs in the country have dwindled in the past few years. There are fewer reporters now across the country and here in the Springfield area as well. One estimate that I saw already listed about 2,000 reporter jobs being laid off just in 2019. We're only, 2 months in. So that's the impact of what's going on nationally. What's the impact here in Springfield and the state of Illinois? Well, less reporting means less of a watchdog presence over state and local governments. And that means as government makes decisions that impact you as a taxpayer and make other policies and spending decisions, there's a chance that you know less about what's going on. In fact, a pretty good chance of that. When I was based at the State House, one of the things that we would cover was things like committees, bill introductions, early parts of the legislative process. And our reasoning was that if a citizen wanted to know and weigh in on what's going on, they needed to do that early in the process. When the bill was passed and signed into law, it was a bit too late. So they needed to know about what was taking place. Telling them, again, when it becomes law, a bit too late, same for city councils, school boards, and more. So when there are fewer reporters being able to tell you what is going on, more things slip past you. We're going to talk about that, the changing landscape of journalism, and where we go from here. Our panel includes representatives from a daily newspaper, public radio, television news, and an alternative weekly. But we also want you to be part of the discussion, and you can ask a question. We have a microphone that's right up here in front of the room, and we'd like for you to step up if you have a question or comment you'd like to make, because again, this is a two-way conversation tonight. Just feel free to step on up when you get the nerve to do so. With that said, I'm going to have our panel introduce themselves. Again, I'm Sean Crawford. I'm the news director for NPR Illinois, and we'll go down the line here.
All right. Hi, I'm Stacey Skryzak. I'm a news anchor over at News Channel 20. I've been in the Springfield area for about 7 years, and like so many people, I never planned to stay. I thought it was going to be 2 years, and now my family is settled here and plan to stay here forever.
I'm Fletcher Farrar. I'm the owner and editor of Illinois Times, and I've been here forever.
I'm Mary Hansen. I'm a reporter with NPR Illinois. I cover a lot of State House issues, and I've been here, I guess, since we're saying how long I've been in Springfield. I've been in Springfield for about 4 years.
3.5 years. Hi, I'm Jason Pisha, the managing editor of the State Journal Register. I've worked here since 1998, so I'll be 21 years starting this summer. Started out as a nighttime reporter and worked my way up, so here I am.
All right, well, that's our panel tonight, and they'll try to answer your questions and comments as well. each of our news organizations does things a bit differently, and I think even what our role is in the community is a bit different, and we want to talk about that. I'm going to ask some individual questions of the panel to get things started, and Fletcher, I'll start with you since you have seniority. What is the role of the weekly newspaper?
Well, thank you, Sean. When I arrived in Springfield a little over 40 years ago, the daily newspaper was the big dog in town, and its publisher was a legendary part of the political establishment at the time. And so we thought it was time to start an alternative, and Illinois Times became the alternative weekly newspaper. And now, just a few decades later, the economy, technology, and the culture have shifted to the point that the daily newspaper big dogs are not nearly so fierce as they once were. The absentee owners are flailing around trying to find an economic model that works without much of the expensive journalism that used to go along with that. Meanwhile, in our town, some thoughtful, values-driven journalists have snuck in and taken over a smaller but smarter newsroom at that daily newspaper. Our little paper, and yes, we still use paper among other platforms, no longer has the luxury of just being the alternative to the big dogs. At 43 years old, we are forced into the role of becoming one of the adults in the room.
Well, you don't rely on a subscription model. You give the paper away for free, you sell ads. That's still working in this day and age.
It works sometimes better than others, but yeah, we sell advertising, we run our own small business, and we survive. We're one of the smallest markets in the country to have an alternative weekly newspaper, and we've found over the years that it works sometimes better in a small town than in a big town. In Springfield, people know about us. In Chicago, the weekly newspaper there, the Chicago Reader, had 100,000 circulation, and nobody knew it existed. So,
when I think about the Illinois Times, I think about journalism, but I also think about the other recurring segments that go in it. The calendar is a good example of that. You want to find out what's going on, that's probably one of the best places to look as far as every week being able to tell you the different events that are taking place. So it is beyond journalism. This newspaper is beyond just reporting.
Well, we joke that people read our paper from the back first. They go to find out who's playing at the bars and clubs and then work up to the news. But yeah, we offer a variety of news, and arts and culture is a big part of what we cover. But we try to cover a lot of things, and we have a news and opinion presence in our paper as well.
Let me jump on down to the big dog at the end of the line then, I guess, Jason Pisha, who is representing the State Journal Register. Jason, you know, when I first came to town, which has been about 25 years ago, the newspaper looked a lot different. It was a larger paper. More people worked there, of course. I can think you could say that about any newspaper in the country. The role of the newspaper, has it changed in that amount of time?
Yes. As with most newspapers back in the day, they were known as the paper of record. We would cover every dog catcher board, township board, city council meeting, school board meeting. And in Illinois, with so many units of government, there was a lot to cover. And we did a pretty good job at getting it all in. With the cuts in staff and the cuts in pages and the cuts in size, our main goal now is to learn what to say no to on a daily basis, and while still figuring out how to best reflect the truth of what's happening in the community. So that comes with a challenge of the managers helping reporters make decisions on what deserves coverage today and what can we skip today. I liken my job to a hockey goaltender during warmups, where the team is firing hundreds and hundreds of pucks at the goaltender. I catch about six of them, and about 40 of them get past me every day. I'm just hoping I picked the right six that kind of help tell the story of Springfield today.
Well, the subscriber base, and you have a subscriber model, unlike the Illinois Times, that's down quite a bit from, I don't know, how many years ago. Can you give any idea of what the difference in subscriber level is for the newspaper?
In rough numbers, I mean, back when I first started, we were, 50,000. Today, we're half that for Sunday and daily. It's made up somewhat by online-only subscriptions. That number still pales in comparison to the lost print revenue or the lost print subscriptions. But it's, we still definitely rely on the subscription revenue and the ad revenue to make it all work. Our overhead with, what we do, we print, 30,000 copies of a newspaper every day and pay people to drop it on your doorstep. So that's a lot of overhead. So we need both streams of the revenue to make it work.
Seated next to me, Stacy Skryzak with News Channel 20, WICS. And Stacy, of all of them, newspapers have been on the decline a bit. Radio, of course, has been down for a while. TV journalism, still heavily watched.
Yeah.
What do you see as the role of the TV station here in Springfield?
Yeah, we're very lucky that people seem to still tune in and want to see their nightly news. I still tune in every night to watch the national news. That's just what I grew up with and what I still like. I think our role is not only to, find the truth and to give the daily news. We are at all the big meetings and the, political things at the State House. But we also are finding that we can dig deeper in some of those stories. We are trying to concentrate a lot on following up on different stories, that we do have that luxury that if there's a big story that hits, we can find other angles to take, because we do still have a fairly large staff in Central Illinois. I think the trickiest thing for us is that people don't always understand our market is different than newspaper or the, the radio even. We stretch from almost the Illinois, probably river, the western part of Illinois, all the way out to Indiana. So not only are we working to cover Springfield, we also are covering Decatur, Champaign, everywhere in between, Effingham, and all the way south towards St. Louis. So we do have a very large area to cover. So we, of course, concentrate a lot on Springfield, but we do need to, we can't ignore our neighbors.
And you also partner up with another station that's in Champaign, correct?
Yes, that's also a part of our station. That's we have a newsroom in Champaign, we have several journalists there and photographers, and so they can cover very well if there is a breaking news out in, say, Danville or Champaign or Urbana, a lot of the University of Illinois, they can take care of that, and we work together with them.
Can you also talk about the amount of reporting that reporters at Channel 20 have to do? I think I know the answer to this somewhat, but it's people might be surprised at how many stories a day some of the reporters turn out.
It is. It's a heavy workload. And we were talking beforehand, it's not for the faint of heart. I think when I started in this profession about 17, 18 years ago, I was in a very small market, and I was considered a one-man band, which now they're called multimedia journalists. So I carried the camera around. I would cover several stories. I would write them. I would edit, which back then was a lot more difficult than today. I would anchor the news. I would do the farm markets. Sometimes I would be a weather girl, because I'm not a meteorologist, but I pretended. And you do a lot in several stories. And we have some very hardworking reporters. So yeah, they may start on one story, and they may be five stories down the line. We have reporters that not only the one story you see on the news at night, that's not the only thing they're doing. They're writing a lot, they're editing, and they're making phone calls. Or if there's a fire we hear over the scanner, they're also out there in, the cold sometimes.
Makes me feel like I don't do enough work right there. Okay, our other panelist, just down between the two newspaper folks, a former newspaper person herself, Mary Hansen. She is with NPR Illinois, works in our shop. And Mary, I'm not going to go out on a limb when I say you're the youngest person on this panel, but I did want to find out, as somebody who only got into this in the last few years, what made you decide you wanted to go into journalism at a time when a lot of people are saying don't do it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think I've always been interested in kind of in research and kind of like finding out. I have a lot of different interests, and kind of I always enjoyed like reading and you know, listening to the radio and things like that. And I think, you know, finding those stories that are important to people and finding kind of communicating, being that bridge for people between kind of what they need to know and trying to like kind of break it down and explain it to them. So I think that's one reason why.
You came to town to participate in a graduate program at the University of Illinois Springfield Public Affairs Reporting. You did an internship at the Illinois State Capitol. So we've talked about, you know, we're talking about journalism in the local area quite a bit. Well, the State House certainly falls into that category. And State House reporting itself has been under fire as far as the job cuts through the years. The Chicago Tribune no longer stations anybody permanently at the Capitol. Neither does the Sun Times, neither do really most of the big newspapers in the state, except for the State Journal Register. You work there. Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen as the decline in the amount of reporting being done on state government?
Yeah, I mean, I was in the public affairs reporting program, and I did my internship with the Daily Herald, which is another one. I think I was the last intern to do an internship with them, because after their State House reporter left, they decided not to staff another one. So even just in like the last couple of years, as you mentioned, with the Chicago Tribune leaving as well, it's exciting. Like last week with the budget address, there's a lot of folks who come down for it, and kind of a lot of Chicago media people and reporters from throughout the state. But then just kind of on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis, it does, you know, there is an opportunity to, you know, to kind of dig into issues or to find stories that nobody else is covering, which is always exciting as a journalist. But at the same time, you know, it's similar to the city beat that I covered after. It's like drinking from a fire hose. There's just so many stories, and you hear so many things. You're like, oh, I should follow up on that. Oh, I should follow up on that. And pretty soon, your to-do list of things to follow up on could fill your whole notebook. So, it's similar to what Jason was saying. You kind of have to negotiate and figure out with your editors or with your colleagues how to kind of attack that list and prioritize.
Mary did work with the State Journal Register before she came to us. Sorry about that, Jason, but she has worked with us now for a couple of years. Glad to have her there. I did want to ask the crowd, and maybe you could just raise your hands on this, but hopefully this will start some discussion as well. Does anyone feel as though the journalism you get today, and I'm not talking about individual stories, but just an overall aspect, do you feel it's as good as what you read or watched or listened to maybe 10 or 20 years ago? Do you feel it's on the decline? Do you feel it's gotten better? Has it stayed the same? Do you think it's gotten better? Raise your hand. I don't see too many hands going up. So about the same, possibly, or gotten worse, maybe? Seems like a lot more folks raising their hands on that. So again, what we want to hear from you tonight is your thoughts about it, how journalism works for you, or what you need it to do for you. I think that gives us some insight, some guidance going forward as well. So don't be shy by just stepping up to the mic, and we'll call on you there. I did want to go around again to our panel, though, and each of you, I'll just go down the line, each of you can answer this, and that is sort of how your editorial strategy personally goes in. What do you think about when it comes to writing stories, and what do you think needs to be covered?
Okay, well, from my personal standpoint, I'm a mother. I'm a family person. I'm married. I am settled here in Springfield. So those are the things that I think about when we are in our editorial meetings. I'm thinking about what's going to impact the community, what's going to impact my daughter's education, things like that. I'm a typical viewer as well. So that's really my strategy, is finding, you know, what's going to impact my family.
Fletcher?
Well, we try to keep chipping away at covering mega stories. We have several topics that we cover that nobody else does, at least haven't covered very well in the past. Topics like race, the media, business, energy and the environment, courts. Those are some of the topics we specialize in. We also cover music, food, arts and entertainment, but we do long-form journalism in a short-form world. So.
Mary?
Yeah, I mean, I think with State House coverage, there's several of us at the station, so we have kind of different beats that we focus on. I do a lot of economy and business and retail, so State House policies that affect that. But I think for me, trying to look at the kind of through line of, there's this policy that affects this this business, or these lawmakers are talking about this issue. How does that kind of connect to the people that were to our audience? How does that connect to people in Springfield or people across the state? We have several public radio stations throughout the state that we serve as well. So what's happening in Decatur often is similar, or Springfield, what's happening in Springfield is often similar to Decatur or Champaign or Peoria, where we send our stories out to. So trying to draw that line with what's happening at the State House, what the lawmakers are talking to, and how that directly affects people.
Okay. And Jason?
Yeah, I mean, our audience, a large portion of, obviously, since we live in Springfield, are state workers. And we can see, you know, we have a little TV in our newsroom that shows the traffic on our website at any given moment and who's reading what. And on state holidays, that line just plummets to the ground because all the state office workers aren't trapped in their offices.
Let me ask you this really quick. Do you think they base editorial decisions on web traffic, on the amount of that people will go to the website to read?
Not totally, or else we'd have just stories about lost dogs and trash fires on the front page every day. Sure. But it's a mix. I mean, if we see a topic doing well that we weren't expecting to do well, that'll prompt us to get the reporters to write more about that topic. But like I said, we know that fires and the car crashes and the murders are going to do well no matter what. It's the cases of finding the topics outside those areas that do well also, and honing in on those and trying to figure out what is resonating with the audience on that and doing more of it.
I do have a question, I believe. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do. I just wanted to... The watchdog side of things. I would just like to hear from all of you. I think the watchdog side of journalism is insanely important, and I'd just like to hear from each of you what would be the most effective way, or what your thoughts are at this point as to how you can fulfill that role the best. I think what we've got here, many of you are working extremely hard, and I hugely appreciate some of the work that you're doing. But again, that watchdog side of it, when you're so strapped and when journalism is in the condition it is, what is your thoughts on it? And if somebody is particularly concerned about some aspect of government, which does happen here in Springfield, what is the best way to approach you and get the information to you?
Whoever would like to take that?
I mean, I can start. The way our medium works with print journalism and the newspaper is, you know, longer form things where we can dig in and take some time with stories. That's a challenge because we have daily demands of filling the newspaper every single day, and frankly, we don't have enough reporters to do it. So it comes down, I just had a conversation with a reporter today about, you know, there's some big stories the person wants to work on, but there's also daily demands. And how do we find that balance? How do we find that line? Because my reporters, you know, we can, like a TV reporter, pump out several stories a day, and it'll fill the newspaper and we'll probably get good web traffic. But in terms of our newspaper reporters, you know, they thrive on being able to dig into a topic and to tell the people about it and uncover something that hasn't been uncovered before. And that takes time. It's not a one-day story. It's a two-day story. It could be a one-week story. And it's becoming increasingly difficult to peel off a reporter for an extended period of time to work on something of that magnitude. So that gets frustrating. But we do the best we can, and we fill in the gaps with wire services. And you'll see stories from other sources like Better Government Association, ProPublica, the new Capital News, Capital Illinois News Service at the State House. So all those things help fill in the gaps while our reporters are doing other things. And then to your other question about how to get stuff to us, just if you know someone at the newspaper, just call them or call me or call the editor. And we're always looking for new stories to look into. I can't promise you we're going to jump on it immediately, given to what I just talked about, but we'll do the best we can.
Yeah. I think, oh, sorry, go ahead. I think, you know, the deadline for us in television, it's difficult because we are turning several stories a day. We have several newscasts throughout the day, and we need to bring the, you know, most up-to-date stories and information to the public. So we don't always have the time to, you know, go in-depth, but we do find ways. A perfect example, and just as she was asking the question, I thought of this, where we just ran a story a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a two-year-old that died, the mother and boyfriend charged with murder. She was under DCFS care. We had a reporter that just looked at some documents that were public, and she started finding some discrepancies, and she started finding some things she had questions about. And we are, I think, believe on day 6 or 7 now of stories uncovering about death in that were involved with DCFS care. So we do try to hold officials accountable. It's not always easy, especially we do work with a lot of younger reporters, but this is also a wonderful learning experience. And, you know, I couldn't be prouder watching our young reporter right now as seeing her. And I mean, she's really gonna make a difference, I think.
It's an excellent story, and she's got a tiger by the tail, and it's fun to watch her work. We have the luxury of not covering nearly as many stories as anybody else. We pick a few stories and try to do them more in depth. We believe in investigative reporting. Everybody does. We try to make that work. One of the things that I also believe in is FOIA. We use the Freedom of Information Act, we push it and push it, and we regularly go to court and we sue public officials. They don't care whether they're sued or not a lot of times, but we think it's our duty to try to enforce the law on freedom of information.
Yeah, and I think, to answer both parts of your question, for the watchdog reporting, I think some exciting things that I've seen are like partnerships, like Jason mentioned with the BGA and ProPublic Illinois. Our newsroom is partnering with ProPublic Illinois, so my colleague Rachel Otwell, she's spending the next year digging into sexual harassment on college campuses. And so, you know, that type of partnership can be helpful when doing watchdog journalism. And then the other to the other question, I know Jason, you mentioned this, but just to like drill down for how to contact reporters, all of our web, at least the NPR Illinois, and I know the SJRs as well, you can find reporters' emails and phone numbers on our websites. So if you don't know them personally, just reach out. We always like getting emails. Like Jason said, we might not be able to jump on it immediately, but definitely find our email, find our phone number. It's on our website. It's on the SJR's website. I actually think it's on the bottom of every story that the reporters write is their phone number and email. So use that. And also our social media pages, all of our like Facebook Messenger, Twitter direct message, all of those are open. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that's good to point out is the fact that quite often we're talking about how overworked reporters are, how short-staffed newsrooms are, but every newsroom likes to know what's going on. So if you've got a story idea, or if you have some information you think needs to be shared and to get out in the public, it's a good idea to contact one of the newsrooms because they will listen to you. We got another question here. How are you?
Dennis McMurray. I was the Alton Telegraph State House reporter for 18 years, from 78 to 96. And I think I knew Bud back when he was with Lindsay Schaub. Was that even before then, probably? Just a little historical perspective. I think we was talking to Molly when I first started there. We had about 40 credentialed full-time reporters in the State House press room. She said there's now only 6, not including the PR interns, who are certainly add a lot to it also. When I first started with the Alton Telegraph in 1970, we had 16 full-time news reporters. We had a circulation of, I think, 45,000. We had 91% of the households in our circulation area got the paper. I think now it's maybe 15,000 circulation and maybe 4 full-time reporters. That's just what's happened. I think a big factor that you haven't really mentioned is that the ownership has changed of all the newspapers. We were a locally owned paper for 90 years. The papers started in 1836. In the mid-80s, it was sold to a chain, and I think they're on their 4th chain now. and the resources have just dropped and the readership has dropped. And there's probably a correlation there. It's part of just the dynamics of young people don't read newspapers anymore.
Dennis, I think he brings up a good point about the decline of the State House Press Corps, as in personnel at least. When you think about that, this drop that we've seen occurs right after the Rod Blagojevich scandal. It occurs during one of the longest budget impasse the state's ever seen. If things like that are not going to bring reporters back to the Capitol, I have no idea what will. But that's a good point, Dennis. I appreciate you making the comment. But let me go to, I'll start with Jason on this, because we're talking about corporate ownership of media operations in the State Journal Register, which has been owned by corporations for a long time. But I think most people nowadays look at the Gatehouse Corporation. Can you talk at all about that? I don't want you to have to put yourself in any type of tough position.
Yeah, I'd like to go to work tomorrow. That'd be great.
But it has come to people's minds that Gatehouse is notorious for, you know, trying to make a leaner operation out of most newspapers.
Right. I mean, if you want to talk pure numbers, when I started 20 years ago, our newsroom had about 60 people. And that was all the functions. That was reporters, editors, clerks, photographers, and a copy desk and page designers. Gatehouse bought us, it was around 2007. One of their first moves was to eliminate the copy desk and page design functions in our newsroom. And they brought it to a consolidated shop in Austin, Texas, which is where our newspapers is designed every night now. After that happened, our newsroom roughly went to about 40 people, and that was 12 years ago. Today I have 20 people in my newsroom. Seven of them are news reporters. So the cuts have been constant. We've been lucky to, at least in the last few years, avoid straight layoffs in most cases. There's been a few, but a lot of it has just been attrition with people leaving and then the position not being filled. We've all become very resourceful, and all reporters are covering all sorts of things now. We have beats generally, but it doesn't take much to have an assignment fall into someone else's lap that it's not directly on their beat.
But before we move off of this, I do want to point out, I mean, revenue is down in the newspaper industry. So in fairness to anyone that owns it, it's not a level playing field from what it was 20, 30 years ago.
I mean, yeah, correct. I mean, I was in a meeting 15 years ago where the ad director is freaking out about something called Craigslist. And like, what's going to happen to our classified ad revenue? And it went down. Thanks, you know, there's a lot of solutions to sell your dresser or your car or your shoes. It doesn't involve the newspaper. And that was just the beginning of people finding different ways to spend their advertising dollar. Some of it has migrated online. The market doesn't bear the type of prices for online ads as they do for print ads. So even, you know, if we did replace by number all of the online ads, the amount of revenue is not the same. So there's a loss, and it's unavoidable in many cases. And like you said, I don't like the cuts, and I'm angry about them at times. In many cases, they're unavoidable in some cases.
Stacy, you want to talk as well, because your news station is also owned by a corporation from out of state.
Yes. I'm not at liberty to talk about. We are owned by Sinclair Corporation, very large. I've worked for a lot of companies over the years, and just to see the changes on the television side, a lot of the smaller family-owned stations have been sold to the larger, to the Tribune, to the Sinclair, to Hearst, Gannett, or Tegna, whatever that one is now. And I have seen, you know, you see a change in newsroom. We are lucky that we still do retain quite a few reporters. The changes that I've seen in my career is just they're going younger, and it's also cheaper because the talent is cheaper. Not saying that that's any worse, but when I started in my career, this was considered a mid-size market. I would never have sent a tape when I was back in the VHS cassette tape days. I would never have sent a resume tape to this size market. I started in a town of 15,000 in Scottsbluff, Nebraska, and that was after I sent 80 tapes out trying to find a job. And so it's changed a lot. I have worked at several news stations across the country. I've been laid off, let go twice, where they've come in and they've either shut the newsroom down or they cut the staff by half. And you know, you pick yourself up and you start searching again. So that's the changes. With the changing in the media, how our corporations have how it's been, the talent, they are sometimes, it used to be a second, third, fourth stop here in Springfield, and now we do get some college kids, as I call them, fresh out of college. And you know, it is a different, you know, a little different because you're teaching them. But I also, at my age now, I love that I get to be that mentor. So it's just kind of adapting to those changes, like he had mentioned, that you know, and still trying to do our job, which sometimes is difficult with a little less resource.
And having worked at radio stations that were owned locally, I can honestly say that if somebody didn't like something, they go right to the ownership. The person's part of the Chamber of Commerce or owns a business in town, possibly another business. They're more responsive, I think. I think that's the biggest difference from some of the corporate ownership, at least at a local level. I did want to mention once again, you're listening to our forum, As Goes Journalism, So Goes the Community. We're in downtown Springfield at the Incubator. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Stacy Skryzak of News Channel 20, Fletcher Farrar of the Illinois Times, Jason Pisha of the State Journal Register, and Mary Hansen with NPR Illinois. And we have another question.
I just want to kind of maybe share a little perspective on how I get the news these days. And so I wouldn't say that I'm a news junkie, but I just want to stay engaged. I want to stay up to date. And what I've found is that I have to go to multiple sources to get that. And that's going to include Trevor Noah and Colbert Report and everybody that's sitting up there. So I feel like I have to do that because I don't know to get a balanced, I can't, used to be, feel like you could get a balance from wherever you were, and now you can't. Speaking of Sinclair Broadcasting, I'm not sure how much I trust what's going on, because if they're doing that, I know that time is an effort. So I sometimes are gonna glance at the paper. I do read Illinois Times from the back to find out what's going on that week, but I might read it as well as 4 or 5 weeks later and still get a lot of good information from it. So I think that in terms of those information, that works really well. I did want to have kind of a couple of things that I notice is that I used to get the Chicago Tribune, and I would read that paper, and then I would get the Springfield paper and the Associated Press article that I read in the Chicago Tribune last week would appear in Springfield this week. And it was kind of like that lag, like, why do I have to wait so long to hear this perspective? And what's the thing with that? So a little bit about that. I have one specific question that perhaps bothers me. We spend a lot of time talking about whether we're gonna put initials after J and B, or I mean periods after J and B. But this is something that I hear on every newscast, including the national nightly news. You know, TMZ says, this part says, but we have not independently confirmed that. So to me, more and more I'm hearing where, as long as somebody else said it, we're just gonna rely that they did the research and we're gonna kind of push that off. And as long as we say they did it, and that bothers me, because I always thought it was journalism 101, that you need to independently confirm your sources before you indeed report on it. And it seems like that the competition is, oh, let's be first. And as long as they said it first, then we're okay to go on their coattails. And that's one of the kind of really things that makes me not trust and feel like I have to go to different sources. So just share that.
Appreciate it. I do think news media has been burned in recent years. And part of this, I believe, is the internet. You're not competing anymore with when the newspaper comes out, when all the newspapers come out. You're not competing when it's the 6 or 10 o'clock news. You're competing immediately when somebody else posts it online. I will say TMZ, in my opinion, is about as good on celebrity journalism as anybody. But you hear that a lot. Some, you know, a famous celebrity has passed away. TMZ's reporting, we cannot confirm it. I think what it is you're just competing against what's already out there. If anybody wants to weigh in on that.
I'll try. It is. We are competing. It's not a you have all day to get the facts and get it out, because now most people are not, whether they're opening the paper, they're going online, they're not turning on the TV, they're looking at their smartphones, and I'm sure some of you are. You know, I'm getting it on my watch right now, the alerts from ABC News. So we do, we, a lot of times, we have a couple sources that we use. We use the Associated Press, and we do use that as our source. We use, if I'm the ABC network, so we go with ABC News. We find that difficult sometimes. We have been burned, and that's why we try not to jump out there and report the stuff until we actually have it. And sometimes then we get criticized because another TV station may have it a day before us, but we didn't have it confirmed. And that's, you know, that calls on our management, but you know, we go with what they want, and that's what, you know, we all believe.
Mary, your thoughts on just the amount of information that is out there these days, and as a journalist, you're kind of up against that sometimes, because the other thing I think you have to realize is a lot of people can post things without having much editorial, editorial leadership behind what they're saying. They may not be confirming anything, but they're saying this has happened. You're trying to check all of this information out. It's very exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes, like, this is going to sound silly, but sometimes it just comes back down to, like, I'm waiting for somebody to call me back who can say, yes, this is happening. And I think, like, that's part of it. And I think, you know, for people covering the State House or people covering local government, I think it's a little bit different than, or a lot different than kind of the national news that you're referencing. I mean, here it's, if you're covering a beat like City Hall or like the State House, you know, you have the cell phone numbers of the people who are the media contacts, the lawmakers, folks like that. And so when you're going out saying, you know, this happened, or you're trying to confirm something, you know, you're actually talking to that person and confirming it. So I think it's a little bit different than what you were referencing about the national news. But
Jason, if you want to weigh in too, I'm sorry.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's tempting when you see, you know, other people reporting things that you wish you knew also. But I mean, we do our best to independently confirm when we can. A good example was Inauguration Day. Remember when Paul McCartney was going to play the JB's inauguration party at the fairgrounds? I think there was a TV station somewhere up north that reported that, and people were going nuts with it all over the internet. I wrote up something quickly and was ready to hit publish, but I didn't, because I didn't feel good about it. And I had a reporter call a source inside the Pritzker campaign who advised us it probably would not be a good idea to go with that story. So we didn't, and we held off, and we found out soon enough it was Maroon 5, which was slightly less.
Fletcher, go ahead.
Well, I think people are getting fed up with not being able to trust their media to the point that they're going to be more selective about who they trust. And some are trustworthy, some are not. So come on. We're journalists. They aren't.
I think NPR has certainly changed direction on that as well, by quite often feeling as though they're behind a story, but it's better to be behind it than to be wrong. And I think that's something that that has become more commonplace, at least on that network as well. We got another question before I get to that, though. I, again, want to make sure that people who have some questions tonight or comments that want to step forward, that we get those in. You know, tell us what you're not getting from your local media, or tell us things that you wish could be done better. We'd like to hear from you, so go right ahead.
Hi. First of all, I'm a recovering journalist myself, so I completely understand your guys' lives. I actually graduated with a degree with communications, with an emphasis in agricultural communications in 98. That ages me. And kind of figured I would have a journalism job in ag communications. I worked here in Central Illinois for several years, about 6 years as an ag reporter. And of course, then downsizing has happened over the years. And what do you guys feel about the, you know, with the downsizing, the loss of those niche beats, especially in Central Illinois with a lot of agricultural communities around, that you don't have those reporters anymore with that expertise that know exactly what the farm bill means, what it means to go out and, you know, talk to those farmers about, you know, GMO versus non-GMOs, as opposed to sending out, like Stacy said, some college student that might have just graduated college and has no idea what exactly the Farm Bill means and has to go sit through Farm Bureau hearings at the State House. And, you know, do you feel something's lost with that? Or, you know, like I said, I figured that was a good career choice, you know, coming into Central Illinois. That would be a job for life. And now that, you know, I'm anywhere near that. Do you feel that we're now suffering because of those niche beets being lost?
Whoever wants to weigh in.
Definitely. Do you freelance? Could you write for me?
I would love to.
I'd love to get somebody to cover agriculture, and I can't find a reporter who will give it the time of day. Come on, there's a lot of good stories in agriculture, and
I'm for hire.
We'll talk, but we can't pay much. But I'd like to have your expertise.
It definitely is challenging. It's something that, you know, I started my career in Nebraska, and I'm from San Diego, California. So I was that young college kid going, what is that smell? Oh, it was the smell of money. You know, I learned very quickly. But so now I'm pretty well versed with agriculture community. But with our young reporters, it all comes down to people like myself, some of us that are the veterans in our newsroom. We're the ones that are mentoring, that we are helping when they pitch a story. It may not be the right angle, it may be an agriculture one, but we definitely do suffer, but we do also try to make ends meet, if that makes sense, with what we have. So we don't necessarily have a beat, but we do try to bring up the stories, and it may not be every day, but you know, our reporters, they're doing their best, but it is tough. Yeah.
Anyone else want to weigh in?
I mean, yeah, 20 years ago, one of our 60 newsroom employees was a farm reporter.
I know. I was waiting for Charlene to retire so I could take her job. And then she retired, and then they cut the position.
Sorry.
That was my
I think for public radio, there's a collaborative called Harvest Public Media, and they've been able to fill some of those gaps. They've placed reporters at different radio stations. There's one out in Western Illinois. Mm-hmm. There's one in Central Missouri, Nebraska, Kansas. So they they have their own editor, and they kind of file stories kind of on a regional basis. So that's not just Central Illinois. I think there's definitely something mm-hmm. something lost there, but kind of on a regional level, that's one way that public radio stations are kind of trying to address that.
And we have, at public radio at least, we've been able to hire over the last few years, luckily, and we have gone to more of a beat system for the very reason, like you said here, that expertise. It's hard to build up expertise and sources on an issue if you're not covering it on a regular basis. And agriculture, surprisingly to me, for as big of an industry as it is in my, I always think is very undercovered in the state of Illinois and probably in most states. So anyway, appreciate the comment and good luck on the job offer there. So let me ask everybody on the panel quickly to kind of give an idea of the criticism you most often get, and maybe we could talk about what can be done to improve that. And again, we could just start here with Stacy. What criticism, especially if you're news organization, not personally, but what kind of criticism do you usually receive?
What have we not received? Now with social media, you know, I mean, on the personal level, I'm called fat, ugly, everything in between often, and I'm criticized as a mother. I'm criticized everywhere. So, which I'm used to, I'm old and jaded. But we try to hold ourselves accountable. I think that, as you mentioned, we are a large organization. Sometimes we are criticized for some of the way that we cover the national stories, but we are based here in Springfield. So if we are going to run a story that, say, is may seem like there's a lot of Democratic politicians in, we're going to make sure that we have the Republican side. And that's what our job here is, to make sure that we are balanced in our news station. So I don't think that everything that goes on nationally with our company is true here.
One of the critiques I hear of Channel 20 a lot when I talk to people is, why are they telling me about some murder that took place in Danville? But I think you touched on that.
I did, and that is probably the biggest criticism. People will come to us saying, I've changed channels. You never cover Springfield news. The other places cover it, you know, more. Well, as I mentioned earlier, we do. We cover, I don't know how many hundreds of miles that we do need to make sure. You know, we are heavy here in politics and Springfield news. news, but we do have to cover the eastern. We can't ignore them. And we do find that a lot with when it comes to severe weather. We have, you know, tornado coverage, and we get the comments of a lot of people upset that, you know, we're cutting into whatever big network show it is that, you know, because there's a tornado over in Danville. Well, you know what? We're saving lives, and that's our job. We are on the air over there on the eastern side, and maybe you don't see the weather here in Springfield, but we are covering our entire market.
Fletcher?
We get criticized for not covering the particular story that somebody wanted to read, but I think another problem is that we used to get criticized more. I think by now, all the people that hate us quit reading us, and a lot of the people that read us love us, and so we don't get that. We used to publish stories, and people would say, "Do your mothers know what you're doing?" You know, but now we can publish what we think is the most outrageous information about some controversial problem, and everybody says, "Well, that's great," you know. So, I think we deserve more critique than we get.
You can have some of mine.
Plenty to go around. Plenty to go around. Mary?
I think there's probably two. I think the kind of not being balanced, as Stacy said, and I think sometimes it, you know, we do try hard. I do have, you know, editors who go in and look for who are kind of looking out for that stuff. I think sometimes I also get criticism, and they'll say, "Why didn't you include?" Like it'll sometimes come from people who know a lot about state government or a lot about a particular issue. You know, whether it's a fiscal issue or tax policy or something, and they'll comment, "Why didn't you include this one tiny detail of like," and it's like, we have to make decisions. People aren't gonna listen to an 18-minute story on pensions. I'm sorry, they're just not. But, so you have to kind of make decisions and do that. And sometimes there are completely valid points, like, yes, I should have, you know, added this nuanced point, but sometimes it's just like, we only have so much time.
Sometimes people have axes to grind, and those axes deserve to be ground sometimes. Yes. So, Jason, go ahead.
Yeah, some of the frustrations I deal with, you know, whether they're myths or people, the things that people get upset about is, you know, the myth that we're not based in Springfield anymore. You know, some key portions of our production process are no longer in Springfield. Like I said, pages are designed in Austin, Texas, and it's printed every night at the press up at the Peoria paper and driven down every night. But some people have taken that a step further, and they think, you know, the newsroom in Springfield is empty, and it's just people who live, you know, God knows where, calling in to the Springfield mayor to get the stories of the day, which is not true. We have a building full of people, not as full as before, but if a building full of people, you know, who live in Springfield. You know, I've lived here for 22 years. We're here. We know the difference between Wabash Avenue and Dirksen Parkway, and, you know, we know the details of Springfield. And then the other frustration is just the people who, we see it a lot on Facebook. We'll post a link on Facebook, they'll click the link and then hit our paywall, and then feel that they are owed some sort of free, you know, a freebie for what they click on. And I get it, you know, you're tooling around on the internet and you're just used to clicking and reading whatever you want. But like I said, our model involves subscription revenue and advertising revenue. And it's just frustrating when people get upset about that. Online subscriptions are cheap, 99 cents for the first month, $6 after that. Or a full year for $40, which is $3.33 a month.
I thought we were going to go the whole night before he got that in, but we didn't quite make it. Let me see. We have another question here. Go ahead. Or comment.
Hi. My name is Eric Broughton. I'm actually one of the co-founders of the incubator. I want to thank you guys for coming. I think open forums like this, especially with journalists, is really important, especially for local communities. Also, thank NPR for choosing us to host this event. We planned on about 20 to 30, and we ended up selling out, and so I'm really happy that we have some spillover over there doing a live stream. But my question is just about amateur journalism. And you know, with the introduction of mobile devices that have great cameras on them and the ability for people to be, multiple people to be every place at every moment, capturing the moment. And where do you guys see amateur journalism, bloggers, and amateur content creators into the traditional multimedia industry?
Anybody want to take that?
Great question. We actually have used plenty of the amateur videographers, at least. You know, we will get emails in with video of something that may not be here in Springfield, or it may be something like a fight that happened on a bus or in a school. And, you know, we would never run it without authenticating it and contacting the, say, school district or whatever it is. But it actually helps us in some instances. It also, you know, can burn us because sometimes we will see that on Facebook, different things, and then we get the criticism of, why aren't you covering this? I saw this everywhere. But, you know, we have received the videos and people sending us, and it ends up being sometimes story ideas. So we kind of have used a little bit of it cautiously.
We would encourage amateurs. Anybody can be a journalist these days. Anybody can publish, and that's good. We just ask them not to steal our stuff.
Anybody else?
In general, I mean, we're fine with amateur journalists as well. We're just concerned about using it if it comes from a hard political extreme, you know, like super right wing today or super left wing today. You know, we'd be concerned about making use of that. You know, despite what people think, I go into my job every day trying to keep things down the middle and to be fair to everybody and to just tell a story. That's my main concern, is keeping it down the middle.
I think one of the things I'm seeing, and Mary, do you want to weigh in on this? I think one of the things I'm seeing, too, is some news organizations or some amateur news organizations are doing some things where they're going to public body meetings and recording them or streaming them live on Facebook, which I actually think is not a terrible thing, because there was a time when the State Journal Register would have all of that coverage, and as Jason points out, they can't do it. The TV station can't send everybody to these places either. And there are folks who just, they work every day. They can't go sit at a city council or village board meeting all the time and find out what's going on with the key issues there. So I think any ability to get that out in front of people is a good thing, especially if it's not, you know, going at a certain level, like a certain angle that they're talking about, you know, trying to push one specific issue, but letting the public make up their own mind on it. So anybody else want to? Okay. Appreciate that. And before, we're getting close on time, so I don't want to keep people all night. We've been going at this about an hour now. I did want to get another question into the panel before we wrap up, and that is the future of journalism. I think that last question may actually play into that a bit, but that and goals for your own organization. So the industry in general, and maybe how it would port, how it would fit into what you do, let's say at News Channel 20. What do you see?
Well, it's constantly changing. And for us, it's to stay afloat. We have to go with the flow. For me as a journalist, that means that it's not just TV anymore. It's the websites. It's Facebook. It's Twitter. I don't have Snapchat. I don't understand it. But, you know, it's all of the social media. So we have to keep up to date because that's the direction that it's going. People can get news at any time of the day, anywhere. And I'm on my phone at midnight, and my husband's next to me saying, go to sleep. And I'm reading the news because that's what we do now, 24 hours a day. So it's adapting to that. It's adapting to, you know, maybe it's less staff for us. It may be, you know, the cheaper talent that, you know, has some wonderful values, and they're learning a lot here. And it's just, you know, that I think that's how we are going. You have to, you know, either stay with it or get out of the business. And somehow I still love it decades later.
Fletcher?
Well, I think journalism is still relevant, and a lot of young professionals believe in it. And I think the country is getting to where it was believing in it more. I think it's important. I would like to see Springfield become a journalism center. It sounds far-fetched, but I remember when Paul Simon came back after losing the governor's race to Mike Hallett, and he started the public affairs reporting program at Sangamon State University. And I think now it's time to maybe step that up to the next level. We could Started journalism school in Springfield, put it in Andy Menard's building on the Y block, and and make Trump pay for it.
Well, we could end it there, but let's keep going, Mary.
If I have any great ideas, I don't know if I can follow that, but I think to the point that I think one of the folks who asked a question, kind of pointing out just the kind of varied sources. I think just that there's this deluge of information, and I think for me, I think one of my goals, and I hope one of kind of NPR Illinois' goals, is kind of being able to take that step back and provide journalism that. That has that analysis that really helps people to understand and is not just that rapid fire, here's 18 things you need to know about the State House today, but here's, a really kind of deeply reported, data-driven look at this issue that's happening at the State House that you need to know about and that you need to weigh in on. So really arming people with that type of information that they can actually act on. So I think that's hashtag goals.
And Jason.
I'm just continuing to struggle with how we reach the younger audience. I mean, we got the 60 and 70 year olds. We got them for now. But it's those 20 and 30 year olds who never grew up with a newspaper in their house, and now they're adults and they have families of their own, and a newspaper just isn't part of what they do. And it comes a lot to technology and getting our information on platforms that they're already in front of, such as their phones. But it also comes down to story forms themselves. I mean, we our big Sunday stories packed with information, but sometimes they're 60, 70 inches and can take a while to read. And, as Bud mentioned, no one has the time for that or the patience for that these days. So we had to find ways to present the stories in ways that get the information out there, but is more digestible to the low patience crowd. And then my other point was, looking toward the future. To be clear, no one at the State Journal Register has talked about this, but I mean, we do need to look at, do we need a newspaper printed 7 days a week? In other cities, they've reduced to 6 or 5 or 4. To make clear, the State Journal Register has not talked about this at all, but I tend to bring it up when new managers come into the building just to see how they feel about it. We had a new general manager start yesterday, haven't had a chance to talk to him about it yet, but it's an interesting concept. I mean, like I said, with our current staffing levels, we're putting out a newspaper every day, but it's hard. What would it look like if we put out 5 4-star newspapers every day, as opposed to 7 newspapers that ranged in ranking from 2 to 5 stars? I think there's some value there. The public relations side of it is difficult to deal with. So those are all challenges we'll deal with, but we're gonna have to face it as the future arrives.
And I think you're also going to see a bit more of news organizations like ours that at one point were really competitors, always trying to get the story first. I think you're going to see more and more of, just by necessity, these organizations having to work closer together, partner up, collaborate, all in the effort to try to get information out to people. So anyway, we're going to leave it there. We're out of time tonight. A lot more, of course, to discuss on this, and all of our folks would be glad to talk more about it with you. I want to thank the Incubator for hosting us tonight, the Association for Women in Communications for co-sponsoring the event here with NPR Illinois. And reminder, you can watch the event on our website, nprillinois.org. We'll have that up in a few days. It'll be available there. And thanks to our panel, Stacy Skryzak of News Channel 20, Fletcher Farrar with Illinois Times, Mary Hansen with NPR Illinois, and also Jason Pisha with the State Journal Register. And I'm Sean Crawford with NPR Illinois. Thanks.
And I realize this may not be part of the recorded version, but I did want to add one thing, and that is that while Fletcher's right, not all news sources are created equal, and it is a relative question to ask, is news better, worse, or the same? the journalists I know work very hard to be accurate and fair when they report, no matter what their resources or the size of their newsroom. So when you hear terms like fake news and enemy of the American people, keep in mind that most journalists are really working hard to do their best to give you truthful, fair, and accurate information. And I thank the panel as well. Coming and travel safely.